Mr. Baum, one time or vice should be enough.
Okay. In this week's parasha, we have the four lashonos of Geula. Begins Lachain Emor Levnei Yisrael Ani Hashem Vayitzeisi Eschem Mitachas Sivlois Mitzrayim. I will take you out from under the suffering of Mitzrayim. Vitzalti Eschem, then Vigalti Eschem. The next pasuk says Lakachti Eschem Lilaom. I'll take your people. Vayisalachem Lelekim. Viadatam, you'll know. Ki Ani Hashem Lekechem. I am Hashem. Hamoyitzi Eschem again, who took you out Mitachas Sivlois Mitzrayim. So right at the beginning of the four lashonos of Geula, it mentions, I am Hashem, who took you out from the suffering of Mitzrayim. And again at the end, again it says, I am Hashem, who took you out. But if you look carefully, you'll notice there's a slight difference. The first time it has the word Sivlois, it spells it without a Vav, and the second time it spells it with a Vav. Why does it change? So Sefer Bar Yosef explains that when Klal Yisrael Mitzrayim, they were suffering a Shibud, but it was a double Shibud. It was a Shibud HaNefesh and a Shibud HaGuf. Klal Yisrael was suffering Avodas Parach. They knew and understood about their physical labor, but they didn't understand about the fact that their Neshama was also in a Shibud. Their Ruchnias was suffering. Their Memtes Sharituma, that they couldn't relate to. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells them, I'll take you out Mitachas Sivlois Mitzrayim. It's written without a Vav, singular. One type of suffering, because Klal Yisrael at that time could only relate to one type of suffering. They didn't realize they're suffering doubly. But then, V'lakachti eschem lila'om, I'll take for your people. There's going to be a Matan Torah. V'yisil lechem lelikim, V'yadatem, when you look back, you'll realize, Ki ani Hashem alakeichem Hashem, Ayim Hashem, Hamoisi eschem mitachas sivlois Mitzrayim, it took you out, sivlois with a Vav, plural. I took you out from a double suffering. I took you out, both the Shibud Nefesh and the Shibud HaGuf. And today we are in a similar matzav, that we realize that we're in Golus. That part we realize. But we don't realize how our nefoshes are also in Golus. That we live in a mokum of probably Memtes Sharitum also. But that people don't feel. People talk about Geula only looking at the physical aspect, but they don't realize there's also, we need Geula not just for the physical, but for the Ruchnius that we're suffering. There's a famous story of the Chernobyl Rebbe staying at an inn. And in the middle of the night, he was saying Tikkun Chatzos, he was crying. The innkeeper and his wife heard him, and the wife told the innkeeper, go and quickly check why he's crying, what's wrong with him? So the innkeeper comes in, he says to him, what's wrong, what's bothering you? He says, nothing bothering me, I'm crying for Mashiach. The Golus I'm crying for, that's what's bothering me. And he says to the innkeeper, don't you want Mashiach to come? So the innkeeper says, let me go and check my wife. So he goes back to the wife and says, do we want Mashiach to come? And the wife says, look, we have over here a nice little farm over here. We have some animals. We have a farmhouse, chickens, some cows. No, we're not interested in Mashiach. Tom, thank you very much. So he goes back and he tells the Shnob of the Rebbe, we thought about it, we're not interested in Mashiach. So the Rebbe says, what happens if the Cossacks come, they burn down your farm, and they take away your cows and your chickens, then what's going to be? He says, I don't know, let me go and check again. He goes back to his wife, and what the Rebbe said. The day he comes back, he said, my wife said, we've changed our mind, we are interested. We want Mashiach to come and take the Cossacks down. And that is now what many people feel we're in. Frankly, we're suffering. The stock market is down. There's a recession. So we need Mashiach. It's so bad already, Mashiach can come already. We don't realize. That's not why we want Mashiach to come. The reason we want Mashiach to come is to realize the Golus of the Neshama. What different type of Yidin we would be if we had the Geula. If you look, it has over here the Yichus of the Shvatim it starts off with. And it mentions first Eile B'nei Ruvein. Then it mentions B'nei Shimon. And by Levi it changes. It doesn't say Ve'eile B'nei Levi. It says Ve'eile Shemois B'nei Levi. It doesn't say the word Shemois, not by Ruvein, and not by Shimon. It gets to Levi, adds in Ve'eda Shmois Bnei Levi. Why does it use the terminology Shmois here, not by Reuven and Shimon, only by Levi? The Shulchan Kodesh explains that obviously it means that the names here were significant. There was something special about the names over here. And what is that? That Shevet Levi weren't in the Shibbut. And Levi, he knew that his Shevet won't be in the Shibbut. But he wanted that they should feel the Tzar of Klal Yisrael. They shouldn't just be living the good life there, but should understand the suffering of Klal Yisrael. So that's why he called his names, his children, names that are meramas to the Shibbut. Gershon, lost of Gerus, Kahos, blackening the teeth, Merori, the bitterness. Even they're not in the Shibbut, they'll feel the Shibbut. And that's why it stresses, Ve'ele Shemois Bnei Levi. They were part of the Shibbut because of their names. They were also able to feel that Shibbut. And that is one of the hardest things to do, is when somebody is betzar, to feel somebody else's tzar. And that was the Madrega that Levi reached. There's a fascinating question from Yonis Naibishitz. And it should have bothered you, this question, really. And that is that we know Shevet Levi weren't in the Shibbut. Try and imagine what was happening in Mitzrayim then. You've read Midrashim, you've heard about what was going on there, and there's no doubt what was taking place was a full-fledged Holocaust. Putting babies in the walls. Pharaoh would shecht Jewish children every day to be able to bathe in their blood to heal himself in Tzaraas. Work camps. Concentration camps. So, how is it possible that Paroi gave an exemption to Shevet Levi? Try and imagine that we can relate to, not so long ago, the Holocaust. Hitler, Yimach Shemai, gave an exemption. If you're in Keitel, no concentration camp, you can sit and learn. It doesn't seem to make sense at all. So why would it be that Paroi would give this exemption? So Bionis Eibishit says a very interesting idea. A bit Kiddush. He says, just like Paroi knew that the Mashiach of Klal Yisrael will be struck by water, he also knew Mashiach of Klal Yisrael will come from Shevet Levi. So Paroi made a cheshbon like this. Somebody who is not part of the Shibud will never be able to take Klal Yisrael out. Therefore, he says Shevet Levi don't have to work. Because if they're not working, since Mashiach Shevet Yisrael comes from Shevet Levi, this way they'll never leave. It means how can somebody take them out who's part of it, and who says somebody's not part of it would want to take them out. He's living the good life there. And that's why he said they don't work. This was a way of keeping Klal Yisrael. But what was his mistake? He didn't realize that by Klal Yisrael, we have this concept of noisa bo'ilim chaveroi. Feeling somebody else's tzar. Like I told you, the Shlomish, Eile Shemois b'nei Levi. He gave them names that represent the idea that Levi felt the Shibbut as well. Vayigdal Moshe, Moshe grew up. And Vayar b'savloisam, says Rashi. He saw their troubles. Noson einov v'liboy lios meitzar aleim. He put his heart, his eyes to feel the tzar. And with this level of feeling the tzar of Klai, being able to do that, of course Moshe was able to take them out of the ship. We see from this how important it is that even when things are going okay for you, is to see if somebody else's tzar to feel. But I found something in this week's parasha that shows you how the sensitivity for another person is much more extreme than that. Partially we could understand this. Somebody's in tzar, he's in tzar, he should feel pain for him. But he goes, the Chasam Sefer carries it to extremes. The Pasuk says that Loi Nochen Lazis Kain, it's not right that we should shech the Avodah Zarah the Mitzrayim. Ki Tov is Mitzrayim Nizbach LaShem Elokeinu. Mitzrayim are going to shecht it, lay name in front of their eyes. They're not going to stone us. So it sounds like Moshe was a little nervous. He was a little scared to shecht that we deserve the Mitzrayim. And that sounds a little strange. This is already halfway through the Makkos. And he's scared they're going to stone him. He knows he's in control already there. They're not working anymore in Mitzrayim. They're doing what they want, Klal Yisrael. So why is Moshe afraid over here? They're going to stone us. We can't do that. Says the Chasam Sefer. He was not telling HaKadosh Baruch he was afraid. He wasn't one bit afraid. He was saying, Loi nochen lasis kein. It's not correct to do this. It's not b'derech hamusa. To slaughter in front of their eyes. And see us taking the avodah. They want to stone us. They're so frustrated about it. There's such an emotional strain on them to do that in front of them. To do. It's like, I imagine you may have seen such a concept of when, and there's times again when maybe it should be done. I don't want to go into all the details now, but makes a child write an assignment, 2,000 words, 2,000 word essay. And this kid works on it for a few hours, walks up to the Rebbe with it, and the second he gives it, the Rebbe rips it into shreds. Oh, nothing to you, that's, you know it's going in the garbage. But seeing it in front of your eyes ripped to shreds, it bothers you. All that work you put in seconds, it's gone. So that's the thing. We can't do this to them. It's not right. The sensitivity, not just for your own people, for your enemy, you have to have some sensitivity. There's a limit what you can do to them. And I found this interesting because look what Klal Yisrael did to Mitzrayim. Look at all the miracles, all the suffering they had. Why is this so bad? I think you see from this that making suffer emotionally, that frustration, that is even big. That's too much for them. Not stop Darke Musa to do such a thing. Moshe tells, Pari tells Moshe, Tenu lachem moifes. It's a strange lashon, Tenu lachem moifes. It should be Tenu lono moifes. Make a miracle for us. So Rechaim HaKodesh explains that when a magician shows his magic act, and sometimes they can do incredible feats, people stand there and are just amazed. It's impossible what they're doing. How is it possible such a thing? Everybody in the room is fascinated when it's a real top magician. They're in awe. There's only one who is not in awe. Because he knows it's just dick. He knows it's just sleight of hand. He knows how he does it. Paris says to Moshe, I want you to do a trick for us. That's Tnu lachem moifes. Make a trick that's a miracle for you, that even you'll be surprised by it. That's a real miracle. So he turns the water into dam. And when he turns the water into dam, it says, the Mitzrayim said, we can also do that. And they copied it as well. So what's the pshat? The Mitzrayim copied it. In order to copy it, they had to have water. They didn't have any water at all. So how were they able to copy the trick? What water did they use? They combined. So pshat, you have to say, is that Moshe Rabbeinu had a 20-ounce water bottle on him. He didn't go without his trusty water bottle. And one of the Mitzrayim says, that water bottle, can I have it from you? He says, it costs money. How much do you want for it? He says, 50 bucks. There's 50 bucks for a bottle of water? He says, yeah. The Mitzrayim says, and then he says, he has no choice. The Mitzrayim gives him the 50 bucks. He takes Moshe's water bottle and he turns it into dam. Ha! We can also do it. Now let's try and imagine what's just happened. Moshe has turned the water Mitzrayim to dam. That means single pool of water, the Nile, every swimming pool, every bathroom, every faucet is blood. And what did this Mitzrayim do? He turned a little 20-ounce water bottle into blood. Not only that, and he says, look what I did. And Moshe can wave in front of him a $50 bill. But the Moshe, I got 50 bucks from it. He'd show you, like, if you're watching the show there, whose side would you pick? So what's the pshat the Mitzrayim thing? Hey, we can do this like you can do. You see from this, your side in life, and that is, you see it over and over again. If you don't want to see the emes, it can be staring you in the face. But if you don't want to see it, you're not going to see the emes. But perhaps you could say another pshat for this year, that there's a beautiful Meshech Chochma. I saw this Meshech Chochma many years ago. He perhaps used it for this too. The Pasuk of Dam ends off by Yifan Pari, the Mark of Dam. Pari by Yovel Beis, came to his house. And he didn't bothered by it, this Makkah. So, what does the Pasuk have to relate to us? Pari turned, he went, say, he wasn't interested. What's it say? He went to a football stadium. What do we care where he went? So he says, Pshat is, Meshech Chochma writes, that Pari raised Moshe for 13 years, which means that cost a lot of money. I don't know how much it is, if it's $10,000, $50,000, $20,000 a year to raise a kid per year. But whatever it is, by the time he finished the 13 years, he'd spent at least $100,000 on Moshe. So his entire for that. How does he get paid for it? He gets free water in his palace. Every faucet in Paro's palace was water because he'd paid for it already. His swimming pool was still full of water. It didn't turn to dumb. His faucets were working. His showers were working. Vayifan Paro Vayovel Beza came to his house and he saw, oh, it's no problem, by everything's fine. He didn't take interest at all. So if Paro had a water bottle, they could turn that to dumb as well, according to this. Paro also had water. He'd paid for it already in advance. There's one more thought which is worth remembering because you can use this on many, many occasions. Ever have to speak by your babas, your zaydas, for making a sheva brachas. It's a birthday, a 50th anniversary, something. There's an unbelievable soprano over here. I mentioned the post before, Ve'ele Shemois Penele. And it lists them. But when it lists the names of Bnei Levi, it does something different that it didn't do by Reuven and Shimon. By Reuven and Shimon, it listed their children's names. By Levi, not only does it list the children, it lists also the names of the grandchildren. How come only by Levi it mentions the grandchildren's names? Rashi is a pshat, and other Rishonim do. Sepurna says an unbelievable pshat. Why do Levi's grandchildren get a mention? So he writes, in order to get mentioned in the Torah, you have to be choshev, good or bad. Either you have to be a gesunter Rasha, a real good Rasha, or a real big tzaddik. But your name mentioned is chashiva somehow. Somebody who's a mediocre person doesn't get his name mentioned in the Torah. So it mentions Bnei Levi, and it mentions the grandchildren by name, says the Sipporno, because by Reuven and by Shimon, loy hoyom etzetzov anoshim ruin likar b'shem. There wasn't from his progeny people who were worthy to be called by name, besides his children, not the grandchildren. However, he says, when you get to Levi, it says, Levi outlived the other Shvatim. Herich yomim al kulam, the gidel gamas bnei bonof. He helped raise even his grandchildren, and therefore they were more chashev. They had a zeda, a dugma. They had a role model of a zeda who they could see, who was involved in their chinuch. Since they had a zeda, they became more chashev. Reuven and Shimon's grandchildren weren't zeicha to grow up with a zeda, but since Levi's grandchildren grew up with their zeda, therefore they were zeicha because of that to become chashev and get their names mentioned in the Torah. Shabbos.
Shabbos. Shabbos. Shabbos. Shabbos. Oh, Rabbi's pressing set.